I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You don't think that it's time that somebody cared enough to have a dream?
Why are you getting so upset? This is not about you.
Yes, it is. You are a human affront to all women, and I am a woman.
At some point, you gotta decide for yourself who you are. Can't let nobody make that decision for you.
How do you go about getting an exorcism?
I beg your pardon?
Hi, this is Mark Kermode. Thanks for downloading this Kermode on Film podcast. I'm delighted to say that I'm joined once again by Jack Howard.
Hello!
Hello, Jack. Ooh!
I'm very excited to be back.
That was full on. You might want to turn your headphones down for some of this. You're in a perky mood, young man.
Yeah, well, I'm excited to be back talking to you. We're going to be talking about Spider-Man.
Yes, so let's just explain what we're going to do for our next couple of podcasts. On this podcast, we're going to be talking about Spider-Man No Way Home.
Correct.
And then on the next podcast we do, we're going to talk about Batman, the Batman.
Yeah, which, I was going to correct you again.
I know,
there.
Yeah, all right. Back in goal, golly, all right. Because we've been wanting to do the Spider-Man talk for a few weeks, but things have, you know, things have overtaken us. So this one is going to be Spider-Man No Way Home.
Yes. Yeah, and then, it's interesting. It is about to come out on home release, so it is getting a second wave of enthusiasm. Yeah. But yeah. We are now talking about Spider-Man as the conversation is very much shifting towards Batman.
Yeah.
We are late to this, but...
Well, hey, you know. It's the streaming world. You choose when you see things. I mean, I should just say, I saw The Batman again last night, so we won't discuss this now, but I've literally... So I saw it twice in a week.
Yes,
I've
me too.
I've still only seen Spider-Man No Way Home. The once.
Yes, okay.
So I want to begin, because I know this is very much your baby, so I want to begin. When I did the end of year roundup for the news channel on the BBC, one of the things that I did was I said probably the biggest news story of the year was we finally got the release of No Time to Die. Mm-hmm. Because at the time that we recorded the BBC news channel, which was, I think, 2.5 weeks before the end of the year. You know, it's like we're halfway through.
What else is going to happen?
Exactly. It's all fine. And I'll be honest with you, Spider-Man was nowhere on my radar. Mm-hmm. I mean, I knew it was coming, but it was like, yeah, there's another Spider-Man movie.
Sure.
What then happened was, of course, No Time to Die opened. It did decent box office. It didn't do stellar box office, but all things considered.
And people liked it.
Yeah.
It did well.
Exactly. It did well, and particularly considering what a terrible time cinemas had had and how much attention we had all given to the cinema industry needs a boost, and Bond keeps letting it down by constantly putting its release date back. And I think both you and I had said, I think some time ago, I'm already bored. I'm already bored with No Time to Die. So when it came out, then fine, it was great. Of course, in the 2 weeks between recording the news channel film review of the year and the year actually ending, Spider-Man No Way Home, honestly, why would you do that, came out and became... actually the film that saved cinema. And I confess, in my entire career, it is one of the most remarkable instances of me not... I mean, I quite often don't have any idea what's coming up on the horizon anyway. But I thought that we were done with 2021 as far as box office was concerned. But by the end of the year, the big box office hit.
It was kind of astounding, wasn't it?
Yeah. So tell me, I mean, what sort of numbers did it do?
I think... the most recent thing is that it, in a domestic sense, in America, it's overtaken Avatar now. not globally. Avatar is still the biggest movie of all time.
Yeah.
But domestically in America, and there's a video, it's a really funny video of a reporter interviewing Tom Holland for Uncharted, who gives a shit.
Yeah.
And even he was like...
unseen in
even
my case.
Well, really, right. Well, this is the thing, is that like even in his Uncharted press interviews, people are still asking him about Spider-Man.
Yeah.
So somebody got to break the news to him that you were about to overtake Avatar. And he was like, what, really? Like, he had no idea. Yeah, so I think it's got about 2 billion.
Okay.
It's something stupid.
Ever since I got bit by that spider, I've only had 1 week where my life has felt normal. That was when you found out.
When you botched that spell where you wanted everyone to forget the Peter Parker Spider-Man. We started getting some visitors. From every universe.
Hello, Peter.
You're not Peter Parker.
I'm sorry, what was your name again?
Dr. Otto Octavius.
Wait, no, seriously, what's your actual name?
There are others out there. We need to send them back. So,
Scooby-Doo this crap.
You know, all this is kind of your mess. I know a couple of magic words myself, starting with the word please.
Please, Scooby-Doo this crap.
So, you know, so from my point of view, hands up, right?
Yep.
I was the old school film critic who thought, end of the year, mm-hmm. Bond is out, that's the big story, let's just close the books, let's just record it. So now tell me honestly, because you're obviously from an entirely younger, did you see this coming?
What, it doing huge numbers?
Yeah.
I knew that there was like a bubbling like build of like hype around it. The sort of like electricity that you can feel before Batman came out. It was kind of different.
Before the Chris Nolan Batman.
Before the Batman came out, because
oh good, I got to correct you about it.
Yeah. So with that coming out more recently, I'd heard that like some friends of mine had already seen it and that they were showing it to critics like a month in advance, and it was all this like electricity around them showing the Batman and how confident Warner Brothers were in it. And they were building all of that up to just like opening up the door, the floodgates, to be like, here's all the positive news about the Batman on one day. Okay. Whereas with Spider-Man, it was just like, oh, a secret. It was all like they were holding everything.
Yeah.
And even though there was all these like leaks online about whether or not Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield were
going to make it. I wasn't aware of that.
Oh, well, this is the thing, is that like online, everywhere, like you, like even I try my best to, with films I know I'm going to watch and love, I sometimes struggle with this, but I try not to watch trailers and things like that and clips that get released, because I'm like, I'm quite good at working out where those things will slot,
yeah,
or like context around them. I'm just quite good at filling that in just instinctively, so I try and avoid, or even I'm in the cinema waiting for that moment to happen. I can't get it out of my head.
No, that drives me nuts.
Yeah.
That is the one thing about is the thing, you're waiting for the thing to happen when they...
I had it in The Batman as well, like the opening shot of the trailer for The Batman is the Riddler being captured in the cafe. And I was like, oh, I'm waiting for that moment now. Like, I wish I hadn't seen that now.
When
it's
I saw the
my own fault, in a way.
When I saw The Batman in BFI IMAX yesterday, that they had trailers before for, you know, for the Jared Leto...
Morbius.
And I can't...
It's a me, Morbius.
I know, I cannot... Good Lord. I mean, is that every single scene in that film I don't want to see?
Do you know what? Someone just invited me to a Morbius screening and I replied being like, I don't think I want to see it.
That's right.
It's just Jared Leto makes me shudder. I don't want to see him be a vampire.
I don't want to see him be anything.
Yeah.
I want to see him sit quietly in a room. Anyway. So
there was all this bubbling anticipation that potentially Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield were going to be making reappearances in this movie.
And did you know how? So you knew?
Not at all. Okay. This is the thing I'm really pleased about.
Warning us, and if you're listening to this, this is a spoilerific.
If you're one of the few people somehow who haven't seen or heard about this movie, turn this off. Obviously, come back later. But yeah, there was leaks online. There was like really pixelated, crappy quality images of them on set, but then all of a sudden there was a high-res photo of Andrew Garfield on some scaffolding that was released. He then did interviews being like, it's a Photoshop. He did so well on all the films that he released in 2021. He was on a press tour constantly, people constantly asking him, are you in Spider-Man? And he kept being like, no, I'm not, and good job on him, because this is the thing as well, I can imagine that from Sony and Marvel's point of view, the idea that, well, it's already out there now,
yeah,
let's put it in, let's get ahead of it, let's put it in the trailers and just confirm it from and take the power back. But I'm glad they didn't do that.
So it wasn't in the trailers.
It was never ever released.
So when I saw the when I saw it the same screening as you did in the IMAX, the one great big multimedia COVID super spreader event, as far as I remember. And I stood at the very, very back of the auditorium because I was terrified about being in an auditorium with so many people. I was triple masked.
Yeah.
And I had no idea about who was going to be in it.
So you were just so on the outside of this.
Yeah, I had no idea. I knew nothing.
Right, right.
I was like, I'm not making this up. I was the blank. So I was like, oh.
Right.
And what was interesting was, as each thing happened, and you know you were in the same screening, the crowd whooped and cheered. And I didn't know
what an atmosphere.
Are they whooping and cheering because they didn't know it was coming? Or are they whooping and cheering because they did know it was coming? Because I didn't know any of this stuff was happening.
Because they didn't confirm any of it in the marketing, and there was all this, like when they released the main trailer.
So it wasn't in the trailer?
No, like what they actually did was remove them from the trailers. So the shots that are in the film of them all landing on the top of the on top of the Statue of Liberty.
Yeah.
It was just Tom Holland's Spider-Man.
Right.
And then there was a shot as well, like the wide shot when, in the movie, all three of them jumped towards three villains.
Yeah.
They just removed Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield's Spider-Man.
Okay, fine.
And then there was this quite funny thing. I think it was a Brazilian trailer. This is how deep in on this I was. And it was within, like, I'm going to say, like 12 minutes of the movie trailer being online. Somebody had clipped the Brazilian version of the trailer where the lizard's head got kicked by nothing. Like, and people were like, "What's that?" and immediately people started just diving into it. And like I said, there was leaked images online of Andrew Garfield, but then there was a leaked video of him like on the scaffolding holding onto it, and you could see his mouth saying something, and people were trying to read his lips. And what they read was,
"I'm not in the film."
yeah. It was his lips, and what they the closest they deciphered was, "So do you have like web blood?" Because people had assumed that he was talking to Tobey Maguire, that his webs are organic, and they were like, "So do you have web blood?" But actually, in the movie, what he says is, "Do you ever have a web block?"
Mm-hmm.
And so people got that close to figuring out what it was.
Wow.
Yeah, it was all this kind of like, I wish obviously there were no leaks, but there was still part of me that was like, I don't know how they're going to be in it, how long, to what. How they're going to be
used?
Because
they're in it for a lot.
They're in it for the third act.
That's right.
This is why I was so satisfied with it. Is because, and maybe we could get to this later when we talk about larger sort of like parts of the movie. But I really liked that they brought in those past Spider-Men to service Tom Holland's Spider-Man. And the big part of this that I really, really enjoyed, that's been spoken about a lot now, is that this trilogy for Tom Holland has kind of served as one huge origin story, because everyone, like Batman, actually, we know how Spider-Man, you know, Uncle Ben dies and then he becomes Spider-Man, great power comes great responsibility, yeah sure, he's Spider-Man. But they started the Marvel Spider-Man without Uncle Ben being in it, without the origin story, he was already Spider-Man when we found him, and so we thought we could just jump over that. And actually what has transpired over these few movies is that people have gone, there's something missing, he doesn't quite feel like a Spider-Man yet.
Right.
And in this, I think that they fixed that. And they actually acknowledged it head on. There's been this criticism of calling him Iron Boy or Iron Boy Jr. or Iron Man Jr.
Right.
And literally put that on like on a magazine in this movie, and they like directly sort of acknowledged that that's what they've been doing. And then obviously they've basically figured out that Spider-Man has to kind of intrinsically be linked with tragedy. And so that to the Aunt May character.
Okay, so even I know, and you know, I know far less about comic strips than you do. As somebody who grew up in the age of, you know, Batman, Superman, Spider-Man, that was pretty much the thing that I always knew about Spider-Man was deeply conflicted and anguished, and basically, I mean, I think even before I understood it really about Batman and Superman, I understood that Spider-Man was on the wrong side of, you know, he was constantly getting blamed for things that weren't his fault, and he had, you know, J. Jonah
Jameson,
you know, against him, and so the whole friendly neighborhood Spider-Man thing was always said ironically, and he was angst-ridden and tortured. So when I first saw the Raimis, that was the stuff that I was looking for. Mm-hmm. That was the stuff that I kind of expected. I always thought the Doc Ock was the best of those early ones anyway.
Oh, 100%. So I still think it's... I think Spider-Man 2 is still the best Spider-Man movie.
Yeah.
Mostly because it plays like a character drama that Spider-Man is in.
Yes.
And yeah, that's why I think it works.
Yeah, and it is a character drama, whereas the first Raimi Spider-Man is much more a kind of kinetic... You know, I remember interviewing Sam Raimi years and years ago when he was making Darkman.
Mm.
And he was saying that Darkman was going to be a really big change for him. And I said, well, how? And he said, well, I've literally sandbagged the cameras to the ground. So his whole, you know, the style change was, I'm actually holding a camera still. And then he didn't really do that anyway. But I do remember thinking, okay, Spider-Man is just like what you'd expect the guy who made The Evil Dead to do if you got given all that money to make Spider-Man. But Spider-Man 2 feels like a character drama. It feels like, which is what I always thought
With the little Raimi touches that you, I mean,
yes,
everyone cites the Doc Ock origin, essentially, when he's on the operating table and there's essentially a scene from The Evil Dead when the arms come to life and kill all the surgeons in the room.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's like clear nods to it and all the crash zooms and the chainsaw and the nails on the floor, like all of that is like,
I love all that
quintessential Raimi.
But you're right. So the thing about having to put the tragedy into the backstory is really important. Did you think that when you watch it, how many times have you seen Spider-Man No Way Home now?
I think it's about 5, maybe 6.
Okay.
I saw it a lot.
Okay. So you absolutely loved it.
I did. And I have this thing with Spider-Man movies. Ever since Spider-Man 3, where every time I watch a new one, and when I watched Spider-Man 3, it was 2007, so I would have been 15, I watch it for the first time and go, yes, I love that, it was Spider-Man. And then I come down from that and I go, oh no,
it isn't,
it's not
good.
Great,
no,
that's not very good, that didn't work. And that's happened with Spider-Man 3, both of the amazing Spider-Man films. And to be honest, with the Marvel version of Spider-Man as well, because a big part of Spider-Man for me is that he's a kid who has no one to kind of turn to.
Yeah.
And in this, he had billionaire playboy Tony Stark
to
turn to whenever he needed
Robin,
something.
Right? Yeah. That's basically what he is.
Yeah, they've basically made Iron Man Jr. And that was a perfectly sound criticism for it. And I felt, watching these Spider-Man movies, like, I was like, I get the John Hughes vibe, big fan of John Hughes, like that sort of teen approach. I like setting him in high school, like making them all kids, giving him kid problems, properly going back to that. But there was something missing from it. And in this, every time I've watched it, I still personally, and I've been quite openly critical of the filmmaking, just in general in Marvel. I think sometimes, you know, the green screen stuff and all the sort of, just everything's told in mid shots and just cutting to whoever's talking. And especially in Far From Home, I really didn't like how much of it seemed to have just been told in an edit rather than actually told on the on the day. And with this, I mean, they open it and it's immediately kinetic, and I really enjoyed that. And you know, have an immediate Spider-Man swinging through the city with MJ thing. But then when he gets into the apartment, I don't know if you remember this, but there's 2.5 minutes of an unbroken take going through the apartment. And I just immediately was like, oh, it has a voice. Like, there's somebody behind the camera who's like, I'm going to do it this way and make a choice rather than just covering it every possible way and choosing later. And then I think filmmaking wise, it kind of for a bit and for a lot of it actually devolves back into that. But it has such a, like, I don't know, like level of fun and enjoyment and kind of knowingness about it that I kind of just let that go. And I even felt myself in the now very famous kitchen scene when the other Spider-Men do return.
Yeah.
I felt my brain going like, this almost feels like they weren't actually in the same room. And I felt myself like, bury that. Like, I was like, nope, just enjoy it. Otherwise you're just going to, like, why take this away from yourself?
Okay.
Like, I could feel, I don't know if Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield are standing opposite each other there, or if they were shot completely on different days. Like, I was just getting that sense. And like, I even hear in interviews as well, there was a moment when all three of them were actually stood in the studio talking to Doctor Strange, who wasn't really there. And I was like, yeah, you can kind of feel that. This just feels like a movie that was made in a pandemic when schedules were really, really difficult to sort of get round and everything. Like, but I think it really ties it together. And actually, I think it's to do with the way that it's told. Less about, like, I guess, the visual language of it, but the way that they are bringing in so many, like, mad ideas and elements from different universes, and yet they're all still servicing Tom Holland's Spider-Man. And I think that's what I came away with, was like, okay, it was all for him, and it was all to sort of push his character arc even further.
Okay, so I have two questions for you. The first one is in relation to Doctor Who. Now, obviously, this is a generational thing.
Sure.
Are you aware of the Doctor Who episodes in which they would bring doctors back from the past?
Yes. Okay. Yes.
So it seemed to me, and I didn't mean this as a criticism when I said it, this is a very big Doctor Who episode in which we've got, you know, Patrick Troughton and John Pertwee, and I don't remember William Hartnell. I think somebody else stood in for William Hartnell, didn't they? And then Tom Baker. We've got them all in the same room. And the joy
is... I remember the Tom Baker one that they did when he's in an art gallery or something and he comes back.
Yeah, and there was, I think there's five doctors, or there's three. I can't even remember how many doctors there are. I think it's called The Five Doctors. Mm-hmm. But as far as I remember, somebody else plays William Hartnell at that point. Mm-hmm. But there was a great joy in watching it. And I was never, you know, like a Doctor Who boy. I watched Doctor Who every week, but I wasn't one of those people like, you know, who could recite all the different names of all the episodes. There was a key period for me which started with Patrick Troughton, went through John Pertwee, and then kind of into Tom Baker, and that was when I kind of lost it. But I remember the joy of watching those, all the doctors find themselves in the same space
and interacting.
I loved it. And when I said that about Spider-Man No Way Home, honestly, the title is bad. A lot of people said, no, but it's, you know, it's much better than that. And I was like, no, that's not a criticism. I always loved that. I loved those episodes. Second thing is this. Where does it sit for you in terms of Into the Spider-Verse? Because right. I still think Into the Spider-Verse is a better film.
Oh, completely.
Oh, okay, fine.
Utterly,
so we're on the same
page.
Okay, fine.
Like, this is the thing, is that I will be so interested to see how No Way Home ages for two different reasons. Firstly, like, the amount of, like, hype and excitement that's around the fact that they're even doing it. To me, it doesn't even, I can't even believe it's real. Like, it feels like a dream that, because Tobey Maguire hasn't been in Hollywood for 10 years or so either. Like, Tobey Maguire's just been gone, and it's so,
what's he been doing?
I have no idea. I'm assuming he's just like resting on his laurels. Like,
oh, so he's literally just, I honestly hadn't even noticed that he,
that's it. Like, I genuinely think the last thing he did was Gatsby, but I might be wrong. But what? Like, oh, you know what I mean, it's been like 2013 or something like that, okay, since he was in like a major motion picture. And seeing him return, like, that to me felt like just kind of, I can't believe he's there, because he's just been gone from our, like, collective consciousness for so long. And Andrew Garfield as well, we left him in the middle of his character arc. And so seeing him come back and seeing him get a chance to not only, like, I mean, that moment when he saves MJ.
Yeah.
Like, I mean us fans who know too much about it and can see stuff coming. From the moment she fell in the trailer, we were like, if they're in it, Andrew's going to have to save her. Because the sort of the callback to him, how he lost Gwen. I love how it happens. I love the choice that his Spider-Man has clearly thought about that moment over and over and over again, so that he knew that if it were to ever happen again, he couldn't web after her. He'd have to catch her and then web both of them.
Just
like, felt like it, and it didn't have to explain itself, but really the moment is when he says, are you okay? And then she goes, yeah, are you okay? And you just see his face, like he just does this little twitch and he nods, and you can just see in his in that moment, because Andrew Garfield's just an amazing actor, like the grief that he's feeling, the forgiveness that he's giving himself, like, it, just in that split moment is just all of that happening. So we've got all of this kind of meta conversation going on around this movie. And when all that kind of fades away, I wonder how people are going to feel about it. And
yes,
another reason...
okay,
is because I think that this Doctor Who thing you're talking about, that is our next... we've talked about this a little bit on this podcast before, I think on our live show. This multiverse thing is the next phase of Hollywood.
Great, it's just some random guy.
Hello. I hope it's okay. I just came through this... just closed.
You're Peter.
Yeah. Peter Parker. I've seen you two. Hi. Wait, he's not your friend.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
What?
Look!
Ah, there you are. I seem to be stuck up here. Oh, so you're my replacements. A dandy and a clown.
Just because to demonstrate to myself that I'm not going mad, so as I was saying, I couldn't remember, it was three or five. So The Three Doctors was in 1973, and that featured John Pertwee, William Hartnell, and Patrick Troughton. And then The Five Doctors, which was in 1983, was John Pertwee, Patrick Troughton, Richard Herndl as William Hartnell, right, and then Peter Davison as the things. That's why I ended up getting them. It's The Three Doctors is the one that I remember seeing when I was young and going, they're all three in the same space.
Yeah.
Mum, Dad,
yeah, mum. Yeah.
How? And because one of them was never in colour. It's like now suddenly.
Yeah.
And so, okay, I think the multiverse thing is a really mixed blessing. I think on the one hand, the way in which Spider-Man No Way Home talked to itself across universes, I thought that was really interesting. Not as interesting as Into the Spider-Verse, which the whole point of it is anyone can be Spider-Man, which I thought was delightful. The problem with the multiverse thing is it takes really good writing to make it anything other than a bunch of shit.
Completely.
And I think that the bunch of shit problem is really, really coming down
the line. Yeah, I mean, like the next one we have, which is
in
a couple of months,
Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness, right?
Yeah, which is directed by Sam Raimi.
Oh, okay, so what's the plot?
Okay, so it seems to be that
I saw the trailer for it last night.
Right. And it looks to me, again, it looks like they've allowed Sam Raimi to be Sam Raimi.
It's a trailer.
But,
you have no idea.
You're completely right. But it looks like the way they're framing certain things, even to me, looks like it still has a Marvel palette, but there's something about it that felt like, well, that feels a bit different.
But it's the bit when Benedict Cumberbatch's face turns into a Rubik's Cube.
Yes.
And it's like, oh, that's interesting.
But that also as well, like, again, because people are obsessed, and I include myself in that, frame by frame in that moment, he's coming out of an animated version.
Okay.
So, like, they're going to be doing everything. I won't be surprised if Spider-Men are in this as well.
Okay.
Patrick Stewart is in it, reprising Professor X.
Okay.
So they're bringing it all. And I can only imagine that after Spider-Man No Way Home, did very well, that Kevin Feige was just like, right, okay, it's a go. Like, people love this. They love seeing them come back. And to your, it's a bunch of shit.
It eventually
will just be sitcom famous person comes through a door.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
And
exactly.
Woo clap. Yeah. And how long is that going to be sustained?
Yeah.
How are we going to look back on No Way Home when all this kind of happens? I find it fascinating that this is, and I've made this prediction before as well, but like I'm telling you, the next James Bond is going to meet other James Bonds. I am.
Oh wow.
Certain of it. He's going to meet an older
Jack.
Pierce Brosnan. George Lazenby, like whoever they'll be able to get. And they already tried. They already tried to do that in Skyfall. Sean Connery was supposed to be the groundskeeper. Who played the groundskeeper?
Okay, but he wasn't meant to be James Bond.
No, but he was supposed to be James Bond's like caretaker of his old house. And it was all meta, supposed to be he was supposed to play that character and he didn't do it.
Because there is a single, I can think of, you know, meta gag in On Her Majesty's Secret Service, when George Lazenby says, this never happened to the other guy.
Fella.
Yeah, and that's, and that's about like, hey, look, did that.
Yeah,
now, anyway.
Yeah. Moving on.
Pass me a cigarette and a martini and some skis, you know.
Oh, and Sean Connery's back again.
Yeah, that's
My, like, broad prediction for the next Bond is that they're going to sell it as like he's the next Bond, but then they're going to do this theory that exists that they've never done before, which is that Bond is the code name rather than the actual name. You're given the identity of James Bond in an almost Jason Bourne way. Look, and I don't want to say that I'm sitting here on this podcast being like, this is a great idea. I just think it's what they're going to do.
Do you remember the Jason Bourne movie that didn't have Jason Bourne in it?
Yeah, not good.
I remember nothing about it. Yeah. I literally...
Other than Jeremy Renner, isn't it?
Other than the guy with the bow and arrow.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, I know, who's the... Let's get him.
Yeah, they also tried to make him the next lead of Mission Impossible as well. So Jeremy Renner has got like a history of trying to replace... big franchises and it not taking the way that they hope.
We can't get the guy we want. Is Jeremy Renner free? Yeah. No, he's crouching on a beam, holding a bow and arrow, waiting and then, to do something.
You know, in the DC world as well, on the multiverse thing, like later this year, we've got The Flash as well, which is going to bring back Michael Keaton as Batman.
Okay, but correct me if I'm wrong. Hasn't Ben Affleck...
He's in it as well.
Okay, as Batman.
Yeah.
Fine, and he's done all these scenes already, because I saw an interview with him in which he said that him in The Flash was the first moment that he felt that he'd actually turned into the Batman. You know, hey, this was like TMZ or something. It came up on my telephone,
on
my phoning device, so I have no idea what the veracity of it was. It might have been made up by somebody.
But also, it sounds like the sort of thing you say to promote something where he's Batman again.
Yeah, exactly, but he is Batman again, right?
I like Ben Affleck.
Really?
Yeah.
He wasn't good as Batman.
No,
he was rubbish.
We'll talk about this when we actually talk about Batman.
Yeah, sure.
But yeah, like this is what's interesting is that we're entering a phase, and this is the year where it's kind of taken off.
Okay.
Where, like I say, all of it. It's
so multiverse Bond. I mean, I'd make a money bet with you now that that's not going to happen. But you're young and smart, and you might be right. And that's
And like I said, I'm not saying it's a good idea. I'm just saying.
No, but I mean,
it seems to be the trend of Hollywood, and Bond follows the trends.
It does, but how? I mean, it works in fantasy universes, but how is it going to work? It works in Doctor Who and Doctor. You know,
the only thing that I can think of is that you set it in a place where we go with the idea that James Bond is the code name. You know, and you kind of do. You know, you remember in Blade Runner 2049 when Harrison Ford says to Ryan Gosling, "I used to have your job. I was good at it." I'm almost imagining that conversation with new Bond speaking to Pierce Brosnan, and Pierce Brosnan like being this kind of old bearded guy who's reclused now, and you know he has to go and speak to him, and he has to. I can just imagine this happening because Hollywood tends to want to follow. Well, Bond tends to want to follow the big trends, and it's trying to lately to replicate what Mission Impossible did, and it tried to replicate what Bourne did. And it's also, if you look at Bond side by side with what was going on.
It's absolutely true that in the wake of Paul Greengrass, Bond movies changed.
Yeah.
Absolutely. They changed because the world had changed and you couldn't keep making that same old Bond.
And also look at Skyfall. Skyfall's The Dark Knight. Like, that's what Sam Mendes tried to do. He tried to make it like a big...
So what in that case was No Time to Die?
That felt to me like a Mission Impossible thing where it was like a lot of stunts, like the motorbike going over the thing. Things like that. But also... just all Bond.
Yes,
it
was just that's right, all Bond.
Tipping its hat to
time.
All of Bond. Yeah, but literally Hans Zimmer. What do you want? All of them.
All Bond. Honk.
Which Bond theme do you want? Yes.
Oh, yes. It is. I wonder where we are. I came out of Spider-Man No Way Home. I'll have to do that every time. I came out of Spider-Man No Way Home thinking, okay, I enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm.
It was really, despite how uneasy I was about being in a cinema that packed at that point in the pandemic, I had really enjoyed being with an audience who enjoyed the movie as much as they did. I saw people crying in the foyer.
Yeah,
I mean,
sure.
Literally people crying in the foyer.
Like, I can't even... I'm getting shivers just sort of thinking about it, like being back in that seat, looking at the moment when the portal opened and Andrew Garfield's Spider-Man was in an alleyway far away. I was like, this is it. It's happening. And like, and just, and it wasn't even just like... It was like the opposite of... I was just so still. I was just like almost like holding my breath. And waiting for it to be confirmed. And it is like a sitcom, and he literally pulls the mask off and almost presents himself like, yeah, it's me.
Yeah, although weirdly enough, when you say it's like a sitcom, the thing is, have you seen Natural Born Killers, the Oliver Stone film?
I haven't.
There's a bit in that in which they kind of, they're
showing...
Is that
the Woody Harrelson film?
Yeah. Yes. It's an Oliver Stone film that Woody Harrelson is in.
That's rather, what I mean.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But there's a bit in it in which they're describing... I mean, it was adapted from a Quentin Tarantino script, but it was very greatly rewritten by... Anyway, there's a moment in it in which they basically are depicting Juliette Lewis's character's childhood as absolutely chaotic, and they so it the thing turns into a television sitcom, but an awful television sitcom with abusive family relationships,
right?
And it's got people opening doors and the audience just laughing in an insane way. Yeah. And even though what's happening is absolutely horrible.
Yeah, it sounds that sounds like a horrific thing.
Exactly. And I have this kind of terror of that sitcom thing about, like you say, you open the door and everyone cheers. You open the door and everyone laughs. You do the thing and everyone laughs. You do the stand and everyone does the thing. And I think that the best thing for me about Spider-Man No Way Home is that it didn't do that.
Mm.
I mean, there was some of it.
It knew that the crowd would react.
Yes. So
But it wasn't what it was hanging everything
on.
No,
I mean, I liked it because I grew up through those various ones. You know, Evil Dead was a really big film for me. So the fact that Sam Raimi had done Spider-Man, you know, that was just lovely. So I went through all the Spider-Mans and was interested and then wasn't interested. And then was a bit interested and then wasn't interested again. And then, Into the Spider-Verse made me think, okay, fucking now, this is great. Yeah. This is a really interesting way of doing it. I still think that that's the future for me.
I completely agree.
The Spider-Verse.
And I'm so excited to see what they do with Across the Spider-Verse. And also, if I was Phil Lord and Chris Miller, I'd be like, guys, where was my special thanks?
Yes.
Like, and also, I remember seeing a tweet. I think Chris Miller said that originally they had wanted Andrew Garfield and Tobey Maguire and I think Tom Holland to cameo in the first Across... Enter... No. What is it? Into the Spider-Verse.
There we go. You see?
Yeah.
It's no way into out of home from the...
to die. yeah, and apparently Sony had said, we think it's too soon for that. And he had tweeted, I guess it's not too soon anymore.
Okay.
And it's like, it would be... that was my idea. I wanted to do that. Now you've just done it. But I suppose that they used Into the Spider-Verse Oscar-winning, you know, brilliance... as a, oh, people like this.
Yeah.
I wonder if we can make this happen in real life. And actually, just in defense, and I don't like the titles of any of them. Homecoming worked because it was like, he's coming back to Marvel.
Yeah.
But then keeping to the home thing, ooh, Jesus. But like, No Way Home, in defense of it, I do like that in conclusion of the story, even though there's all this multiverse traveling, really it's about how Peter Parker now no longer has no way home. That, like, because of the decisions he's made in the film, he now is alone and has nobody. And I think that, when I came out of it, I was like, now we've started.
Okay.
Now he's alone. He's in this, like, crappy little apartment. He's made his own suit. It's properly vibrant red and blue. I was like, okay. Now it feels like Spider-Man can start. And it feels like what we've seen before that was a...
There is just something very ironic about this many movies down
the road.
Now it feels like it can start, you know.
I know. Yeah.
There was a Peter Cook and Dudley Moore sketch years and years ago. I think it must have been in the 60s. I only ever saw it on video, as it was back then. And it was like a pastiche thing about all the Gerry Anderson, all the Gerry Anderson stuff stuck together. And it was like a mashup of all the Gerry Anderson things. And it was called Super Thunder Sting Car. And that
it was called what?
Super Thunder Sting Car.
Okay.
Which was just like, you know, just like all the Gerry Anderson things all in one thing. And there are times when I'm watching those, you know, and I just think that is Super Thunder Sting Car. It is that and then that and then that and then that and then that. I still think that Spider-Man No Way Home had a heart.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it felt like it felt like it wasn't just a machine.
Yes.
Although it is a machine, but it felt like it was a machine that had a heart. And I did enjoy it. I just, in the wake of it, watching The Batman yesterday and seeing the trailers beforehand and thinking, The multiverse future is worrying me. It's really worrying me.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I do. I have a similar feeling that I think that eventually people are going to think that that's what people want, and they're going to forget, like, what you're saying is true, that they've gone multiverse, but they've remembered that at the heart of it, it needs to be about our single main character,
yeah,
and what is it doing to service their story.
So the point that you make, which I think is actually very, very perceptive, is that the whole thing is that all that stuff serves that character.
Yep.
It's not all that stuff serves the expanding universe. And heaven knows we've all seen enough Marvel movies in which you think, you're literally just setting up other franchises, which is great, but it feels like being in a board meeting.
Just in a big trailer.
Yeah, it's like, yes, exactly. Here's the trailer, and then the next thing you see is a three-hour trailer for the next 16 movies. That you're, it's like, just make me a film.
Yep.
And I think you're absolutely right, and I hadn't really realised it until you said it. The reason that Spider-Man No Way Home feels different is it they are all serving his character. Mm-hmm. In the end, they are all facets of his character. In the end, they are all things that are part of his character.
And they're trying to, like, that first introduction scene where they all meet each other, like, in the fans' minds, it was going to be like Tobey Maguire's theme hits and he swings in to save the day and he's like, hey, kid. Like, that's what they were imagining. But actually, it was him on top of a school roof saying, hey, man, I've been through grief as well. Yeah, and him being like, I don't want this. And him being like, okay. Like, and that, I think, and like you say, bringing him back in a kitchen. Like, rather than doing this grand sweeping introduction, which I think we're going to see, like, I imagine Michael Keaton's Batman won't be returning in a kitchen. I think he'll be coming back hard and fast.
Will he have a chin?
Who knows?
Has it been chin working out? Because you can't, the thing about that is, you can't do anything about not having a chin. I mean, you can do as much body bulking up as you like.
Especially after Patterson's jaw.
Yeah, he has, yeah.
All the jaw.
That's all the jaw, all the time. In fact, we'll talk about this when we talk about the Batman, but the way that they've cut the mask on his, so the mask has almost got a kind of like an upturned smile, and then the kind of slight cuff underneath.
Yeah.
It's like going, look at the jaw on him.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Even Val Kilmer, take a step back. That's a proper jaw.
But yes, and I think that one of the standout moments for No Way Home, when you think about it as a character thing and why it works, is Aunt May's death. I really, really enjoyed that, and they didn't just go, this time it's Aunt May saying, with great power also comes great responsibility, or whatever they've taken
whatever
the original
the derivation
line
of it is there. Yes,
they've taken the original line from the comics and made it that. But I like that they made Aunt May Aunt May, because I didn't like what they done with Marissa Tomei's version of it, where she was kind of like the wine aunt. It was a bit strange. This, she really had like a purpose, and she like ran the she ran like the homeless shelter and stuff. And then I'd never seen a death scene like it in, especially not in a big blockbuster movie like that, where it's kind of, I read about it afterwards, it's called like walking zombie, where somebody doesn't know that they're dying, they're so full of adrenaline.
Right.
And like, even when she was hit with the glider, I was like, she's gone, that's it. And then she stood up and was like, I just need to catch my breath and things. And then eventually just went down and never realised that she was dying.
Yeah.
And both of them are amazing in that scene. But Tom Holland, when the camera's close on his face and he's acting, he is fantastic.
Yeah, yeah.
He is really, really brilliant.
Yeah. No, he's very good.
Yeah.
And he is the heart and soul of the film. Jack, this has been a pleasure. So the next one we're going to do is we're going to do
The Batman.
The Batman. And we'll talk a lot about the. But I think just...
My name is Vengeance. But, call me Vengeance, Alfred.
But broadly...
You're not my dad.
Broadly speaking... Oh, no, I'm not. And that is funny, because actually, God bless him, I did this thing for the Michael Caine auction. I wrote this kind of appreciation of Michael Caine that he was very nice about.
Oh, wonderful.
Well, he's been very nice about me, and he asked me to do it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I want to just say that again.
Please.
Michael Caine asked me to do it.
Sir Michael Caine.
Yes, so I said yes. And then he said thank you. And then I went and lay down in a bath.
Wow.
Yeah, but there is an interesting thing that, again, it's like, okay, Andy Serkis, follow that. And I love Andy Serkis.
Who doesn't?
And I think he does, okay, let's do it very differently. But it is a kind of, you know, would you like to take on this role that has been done rather well?
But it's interesting as well, like just being like, follow that has happened a fair few times with things. And it's always like, oh, that's kind of... Look, it's even like, I mean, this is almost a teaser for what we're going to talk about. But Matt Reeves following, let's just say, Nolan... It's like, follow that. Like, do Batman better than that.
Yeah.
And he's taking the mantle, and he's Yeah, well, we'll find out what I think more when we talk about it later.
I also think, and bring this to a close, I also think that the end of No Time to Die is a bit, yeah, follow that.
Yeah, you know, that's Daniel Craig. You might as well have like, said it.
Yeah, there we go. And
I killed Bond. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And now I am off. Bye-bye.
Going to do Knives Out 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
Yeah, until they do the Bond multiverse and then they'll be back again.
Benoit Blanc meets Daniel Craig's Bond.
Yeah, as I said, I always come back to that thing that Kim Newman said, that in order for the Blofeld plot to have worked, he must have been planning it since he was 6.
Yes.
Anyway, all right, Jack, a pleasure. If you've enjoyed this podcast, you know all the usual stuff. Subscribe, tell your friends, blah, 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 blah. Jack and I will be back very soon talking about the Batman.
Call me vengeance.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real frank discussions, talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.